ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
So in my last class, I had dealt with the second part of the Vedas. As we know, Vedas are divided into three parts. The portion dealing with the rituals, actions. The portions dealing with upasana or contemplatives. And the part dealing with pure knowledge. Karma kanda, upasana kanda and jnana kanda. These are the three things. So I gave some examples how we should contemplate the pranava omkara. Also gave the example of how Gayatri should be contemplated. And briefly I also told you how Sri Ramakrishna had to be contemplated. Now we will start the topic on Upanishads. Upanishads are the most important part of the Vedas. That is why they are also called as, known as Vedanta. Anta means the essence, or it also means that which is comes at the end. The literal meaning is anta means end. Usually these knowledge portions known as Upanishads come at the end. Why? Like ourselves getting wisdom teeth always come in old age. Sometimes, yes, some people are lucky, come in the early age also, but usually the very old age. Wisdom comes after, you know, when we lose all our capacity to enjoy, then mind becomes calm, then wisdom comes. So, these Upanishads, we will deal with that. But before that, what I would like to tell you is that Vedas are the basic scriptures of Hindus. And it is these teachings propagated from teacher to the disciple since thousands of years that has become the basis of Hinduism. Now, these Vedas are four in number. You know it. Just jog your memory. What are those? Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda and Atharva Veda. Each of these Vedas have a particular content or the purpose. The very word Rik means praise, praising the Lord or praying to the Lord. Either praise or prayer. Which comes first? First comes prayer. Then comes fulfillment of desire. Then comes praise. You don't say thank you usually before you receive anything. Only after you want to make sure that you receive, then otherwise your thank you may be wasted. So the human beings, they have so many needs, and even today, no modern science or even any knowledge we are going to gain in the future is ever going to solve the problems of life. Temporarily, yes. And in a small way, small measure, yes. Not completely, and not at all permanently. Therefore, we need help. And what can give us? That is the quest of these Upanishads. So, this first prayer, that is called Rig Veda. It is also known as Samhita. Samhita means a collection. Different people had prayed at different times, praised gods at different times. They have all been collected. Samhita means a collection. Second Veda is known as Yajur Veda. The very etymological meaning of the word Yajuhu means Yajana, Yajna, to worship. So how to worship gods, various gods, in what form, how many times we should do our mantras. To make the point clearer, you know, we do special pujas on special days. And so there is a particular way of doing it. There is a krama of doing it. Even if you see people performing pujas 1,000 times, there is always an order of doing it. And if you know that order, everywhere it is exactly the same. So these books which explain how to perform rituals with the help of these special prayers or mantras, that is the subject matter of the second type of Veda known as Yajurveda. So first prayers, then performance of the rituals. The third part is called this Samaveda. Samaveda means sing beautifully for the gods. This is the third part of the third Veda called Samaveda. Our modern music, Indian music, Hindustani music, as well as Karnataka music, the foundation of this music is Samaveda. They used to sing. But it has changed a lot. Or to give an example, if you want to know what is Samaveda, the only example I can give you, because most of you would never have heard the real Samaveda, is the Muslim priests saying their prayers, Allahu Akbar. That is an example, or Gregorian chants, if you have heard. That is an example. There is a wonderful way of singing. It soothes the mind. Then the fourth Veda is known as the Atharva Veda. It has come much later, and that also contains prayers as well as some part of rituals, but especially it contains how to supervise a yajna or a ritualistic part, and lots of this Veda is filled with various types of black magic mantras, how to cure diseases, how to get rid of the poison of a scorpion, a snake, or get rid of an enemy, or get some things through the uttering of some prayers, how to win the lottery ticket. So these are the four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda. Each Veda again is subdivided into four separate parts. So these are known as, first is known as Rigs, then what is called Brahmana, then there is what is called Aranyaka, then what is called as Vedanta, Upanishads. Rig, Brahmana, then Aranyaka, then Vedanta are the Upanishads. This is very important. Why this division? So according to Hindus, life has been divided into four parts. Approximately, according to ancient Hindus, an average human life consists of 100 years. This is divided into 25 years. So a student's life would be approximately 25 years. Then a married life, another 25 years. Then a retired life, another 25 years. And a life totally devoted to self-knowledge is another 25 years. So this division is, you can only say, an ideal division. Everybody may not be living such a long time. Some would be students lifelong because the brain is very dull. They will never get over it. These four parts of the Vedas approximately are prescribed for four stages of the life. The first part, Rig Veda, it means to know. A student has to know how to pray to God, what to pray to God, and how to perform rituals, etc., acquire the knowledge. The second part is called Brahmana. Brahmana explains how to actually perform them. Now you have known, like a newly going to be married bride quickly purchases some books, a shortcut guide to how to cook exceedingly well. It's a cram, the knowledge. But the real practice will come only after the marriage. So like that, a student learns these things. and then he gets married, then he has to put these into practice. That portion of the Veda which explains to people if these rituals have to be effective, how they must be performed. There is an exact science. So these portions are called Brahmanas. Now, the word Brahmana, you should not mistake, is the caste. A man born in a Brahmana caste has nothing to do. This is a portion of the Veda known as Brahmanas. Then, you know, the householder goes on, he gets children most of the time, and then he earns money. He enjoys, say, let us say, he has become 50 years old, 50 plus. Then the time has come for retirement. What should he do? So according to Hindu view of life, ideal of life, that this person must have prepared his whole life for retirement. So he should go, if he will become, he enters into the third stage and goes to a secluded place. So he is known as Vanaprastha. Prastha means to go and live. Where? Vana. Vana means secluded place, usually forest in the olden days. He will go there along with his wife. Now, the third part of these Vedas, they correspond to this third stage of life. They are called Aranyakas. Aranya means forest, pertaining to the forest. This is not a knowledge about trees and how to grow and all that, graft and all that. These Aranyas say, all the rituals the householder has been doing, actual practice, now he need not do them. He should be able to do them in the mind, manasika. Mentally, he should be able to do it. This is called upasana, as we dealt some of the vidyas in my last class, contemplative techniques. So these retired householders, both husband and wife, they devote themselves to what we call meditation, serious meditation, equivalent to upasana. And they must continue until their mind becomes one with the object of their meditation. If that happens, then they enter into the fourth stage of life, which is called sannyasa. By this time, the man's desire for enjoyment of the world has become much less. His mind has become pure, it has become concentrated, and it has become capable of apprehending the higher truths by faith, through proxy. Then he has to actually to realize them. That is when he is advocated to take the fourth stage of life, which is sannyasa or monastic life. Then he should devote himself to the practice and realization of the essence of the Vedas. What is that essence? As we said, Vedanta. Vedanta means Upanishads. And what do the Upanishads teach? So, if I have to give you two examples, if someone asks you, you are attending Vedanta Center, you have been learning about Vedanta, what is the essential teaching of Vedanta? Two ways of explaining it. One way of explaining is, take Swamiji's quotations, each soul is potentially divine. To realize that we are divine is the only goal of life. Realize this either through Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga or Raja Yoga or Jnana Yoga, and know that you are the divine, you are the supreme soul. This has been put in another way in the Upanishads. These are known as Mahavakyas, the quintessential teachings of the Upanishads. There are many, but just to give you two. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, means I am potentially divine. Or the teacher will say, Tattvamasi, thou art that. Thou, the bound soul, is not the reality. You are in reality the supreme soul. These are only two examples given. So this is the essence of the Upanishads. So the fourth part, a man enters into the fourth stage of life. Supposedly, it is not a Indian government promotion. Every few years, he becomes automatically promoted. This is not like that. We have to lead the life indicated by the Vedas, and there will come a time when naturally we will progress. Some people may take many lives, some people may just will be able to do it in a few years' time. Depends upon their capacity, qualification. But the ultimate stage of life is called sannyasa. What is sannyasa? Roughly translated, it means take to monastic life. Take the life of, to the life of renunciation. But it doesn't mean external renunciation. Many times we mistake about it. One need not take to the ochre cloth or even formal vows. But inside you will know, first of all, that you are the divine reality. Once you come to know, then you will become perfect. You do not need anything else. So that is where the Upanishads are to be studied, to be thought over deeply with crystal clear rational mind, and having come to a definite conclusion that they are the truest teachings, go on contemplating on those teachings until the faith turns into fact, belief turns into realization. Some of the contemplative techniques which one is supposed to practice in the third stage of life, I had already dealt with in my last class. This class, I will devote myself to the Upanishads in brief. I can go on and on, but I do not wish to do that. I wanted to give you a bit of a right understanding at the same time, very briefly. This is only a class on Hinduism, just for most of the Hindus and also non-Hindus to know about it. Okay. How many Upanishads are there? First question. So it is said that there are thousands of Upanishads, but they have been lost to us because there were people who made it what is called intellectual copyright property. They want to give it to anybody. But when they died, and there was no record of it. But there are more than 200 Upanishads are there. But according to one tradition, 108 Upanishads are well known. Of these 108 Upanishads, there are only 10 Upanishads which have become very, very popular. This is because there was a great teacher called Shankaracharya who deigned to comment upon them. And all Upanishads are marvelous. But he had chosen certain Upanishads which he thought were very important, which I would agree and many would agree that his selection is an excellent selection. So these are the 10 Upanishads are very, very important Upanishads. Now, there are so many other Upanishads have come, including one Upanishad called Allah Upanishad. But Orthodox Hindus do not count that as one of the real Upanishads. But it is a nice Upanishad in its own way. Only the name is given Allah. We don't need to bother about it. So what is the age of these Upanishads? According to our Hindu tradition, they said almost 11,000 years. But we do not need to go into those details now. What is important is these Upanishads are the very life breath of Hinduism. And what is called GPS, according to the GPS. What is GPS? Guru Parampara system of Hinduism. So these Upanishads have been regarded as the very essence of the Vedas. That is why they got the name Vedanta. And all teachers, whatever may be their differences of opinion, they all preached only the Upanishads. Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya, Vallabhacharya, all these teachers have only interpreted the Upanishads in their own way. They all say that Upanishads are the essence of Vedas. The only difference is their different type of understanding and interpretation. Now, here we are at the Vedanta Center. So the center itself known as Vedanta Center. Why? Because Swami Vivekananda has preached nothing but Vedanta. But he preached the correct interpretation of the Vedanta. So sometimes it is also known as Neo-Vedanta. Neo means not new Vedanta, but a new understanding of the ancient Vedanta, according to the lights of Sri Ramakrishna. Swami Vivekananda is only voice of Sri Ramakrishna. So, Vedanta means Upanishads. What is the meaning of the word Upanishad? Some of you definitely know, you must have studied. This word consists of three words, two prefixes and one word. Upa, Ni, Sat. Put together, it is pronounced as Sat becomes Shat. Upa, Ni, Sat becomes Upanishad. See, this the rules of conjoining, sandhi rules. Upa means near. Ni means very, very near. Sat means it has different meanings given by different acharyas. But in short, what it means is, one meaning is sitting. Sit near. Another meaning is this word sad, that which destroys, that which leads us to. So in the first meaning, sitting near means earnest students who want to know what is the goal of life, what is our real nature. He will go to a wise teacher, sits at his feet. What does sitting at the feet doesn't mean? Sitting on his feet and giving him trouble. What it means is, he is so close, in rapport with the teacher. The teacher is trying to give him something. He is in a fit state to receive it without distorting. That is called sitting near. And the nearer he is to the teacher's heart, the sooner the transmission takes place. So, sitting and then absorbing the wisdom from the teacher. And what does the teacher teach? That Tattvamasi, thou art that. What does the student receive? Aham Brahmasmi, yes, I am that Brahman. Not only I, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is nothing but the ultimate reality. This is the meaning of, one meaning of word, sitting near. Another word is that which destroys. What is destroyed? Whatever is obstructing our right vision, that is destroyed. There is somebody, something in front of me, but there is a thick curtain. I am not able to see. So, somebody comes kindly and removes that curtain. Or, we are sitting in darkness. Suddenly, somebody puts on the light. So, what does the light do? It destroys the darkness. Or, third meaning is leads to the truth. Now, if man is thirsty and he doesn't know that water is nearby, he is crying, I am thirsty, please help me. And somebody who knows about the source of the water, he comes, takes him by the hand and says, come, I know the way, I will show you. And he will take you to that place. So leads to reality, leads to Brahma. So that is the meaning of the word Upanishad. Upa means near, Ni means very, very, very near. Sat means sitting and receiving the wisdom, that which reveals to us our own true nature, our reality, and it will destroy our ignorance. It makes us completely fulfilled, and there is gaining which there is nothing further more to be gained. After gaining that reality, no one would seek, because he knows there is nothing further to be sought or attain. That is called Brahman, no self-knowledge, Brahman knowledge. So that is the meaning of the word Upanishad. Now, to understand properly, what do the Upanishads really teach? What they take us, as I said, they take us to the reality, gives us self-knowledge. And this self-knowledge brings us to the goal of life. Goal of life means having achieved which there is nothing further to be attained. Until we attain which, we go on seeking instinctively. So we have already done two classes, if you remember. One on Isavasya Upanishad, another on Katha Upanishad. So before doing any Upanishad, we also have to give a peace chant. So let us take one example, Ishavasya Upanishad. Before doing Ishavasya Upanishad, we do a peace chant. It is called Purnamadaha. Purnamadaha, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva Avasishyate. That transcendent reality is infinite, perfect. This experienced, visible reality in which we are living is also infinite, perfect. This visible reality has come from that invisible reality. Having come from that invisible, infinite reality, this visible, infinite reality is also infinite, and nothing is lost in that invisible reality. If the infinite is taken out of infinity, still what remains is infinite only. So, peace be to all. This is the essence of this. It also shows us what the Upanishads are going to teach. What are they saying? We come from, in simple words, we come from God. And we are God. And we go back to God. Even though we have come from God, God doesn't become any less for that, because he is infinite. So this is the indication of what the Upanishads teaches. Now, these Upanishads have become very, very famous. And there is a short history I would like to mention at this stage before I go further. In 1650, 50 Upanishads were translated into Persian under the patronage of Prince Dara, the son of Shah Jahan, Emperor of Delhi. Shah Jahan, who built the Taj Mahal. His son, just imagine, his son became deeply interested in the Upanishads. And he got them translated, 50 of the Upanishads, into Persian language. And from the Persian, they were translated into Latin in AD 1801 and 1802 by a Frenchman. And Schopenhauer read and studied this Latin translation. And he declared, in the whole world, there is no study so beneficial and so elevating as that of the Upanishads. It has been the solace of my life. It will be the solace of my death. He must have understood the meaning of the Upanishads. Just imagine, it is a translation of a translation. But he must have been a very great mind to be able to understand the meaning of these Upanishads. Even for most of us, these Upanishads are very abstruse. That's why so many commentaries have come. And just by reading the translation, he was able to understand. Later on, the British East India Company under Max Muller had translated many of these Upanishads. But Upanishads, as I said, you know, are very abstruse. Then how are we going to understand them? Not to worry. Why? Because the essence of the Upanishads has become very popular for Hindus in the form of a scripture of which we all know, we all revere, we all read. What is that? Bhagavad Gita. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dugdha Gopalanandana Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahat. The essence of all the Upanishads is Bhagavad Gita. There are many who do not know much about Bhagavad Gita. They must have heard about it, read one or two slokas, but have not understood much. Not to worry. And the essence of this Bhagavad Gita is the gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. If you have read the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna or the teachings of Swami Vivekananda, you have understood what the Upanishads have got to tell you perfectly, without any distortion. Why did I say that? Because Sri Ramakrishna is one of those teachers who never distorted the real meaning of the Upanishads. He did not say this particular God or that particular religion alone can give you salvation. No, you are the divine. Any religion, what can it do? It can help you to remove the veil. That's all. No religion is ever going to give us salvation. No God is ever going to give any salvation to us. No Guru, no God, none is ever going to give us any salvation. What is the reason? No guru, no god, no scripture, no religion is ever going to free you from your bondage. What is the reason? The reason is you are never bound. You do not need to be freed. You are ever free. And what do? They remove that ignorance that you are ever free. They want this only understanding. They will give you the, that's why they say jnana. They will give you the jnana. Now you don't know that you have so much bank balance. Somebody will come and tell you, why are you begging? You have so much money in your own balance, bank. So that's all. Just give the correct knowledge. That is what Vivekananda did. That is what Sri Ramakrishna did. He never gives anything because there is no need to give anything. So without, but to be able to do it without any distortion, without misinterpretation, without being fanatical, that is the speciality of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda. And also there are many teachers, many devotees who follow this. That is the correct interpretation. You have heard the word Upanishads. You heard the word, you know, Gita. You might not have read Upanishads, but you have read in a way, if you have read the Gita and understood. You have read Gita and understood in a way, even if you have not read it, if only you have read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and the teachings of Swami Vivekananda. That's enough. So as I said, there are more than 108 Upanishads, and out of them, 10 Upanishads are very, very important because they have been commented upon by the great Shankara, some of them by Ramanuja, and some of them by Madhvacharya, etc. What are those Upanishads? Just to give you a brief mention. Isha, Kena, Katha, Prashna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Aitareya, Taittiriya, Chandogya, Brihadaranyaka. Of these 10 Upanishads, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka are the biggest. They form the bulk of these Upanishads. Of these two Upanishads, Brihadaranyaka, it is called Brihadaranyaka. Brihat means what? Big. Aranyaka means the teaching given in the forest. So these Upanishads are also known as Aranyaka teachings, because usually, traditionally, they used to be given by a teacher to the qualified student in a secret. Forest here means secluded place. Forest here means a teaching which can be only given to a fit disciple. Secret. Secret not in the sense that it is copyrighted. In the sense, very few people are fitted to receive this sublime knowledge. If you go on telling to somebody, you are divine, he cannot understand because he knows I am a miserable fellow. I am very, you know, inferior. There was a fellow who was suffering from inferiority complex. So he was taken to a psychiatrist and he treated him for 3 years and then called him one day and said, I am terminating my treatment of you. The man said, but doctor, I have not been cured of my inferiority complex. The doctor said, you are not suffering from inferiority complex. You are inferior. All these punishments, all of a sudden, we cannot teach this highest truth. Slowly, slowly, step by step, his mind should be purified. It must be made ready. Nishitaya buddhya. The mind, the intellect must be sharpened through contemplation, through selfless service, etc. Otherwise, lots of doubts will come. And sometimes we feel we understand. And other times we feel we don't understand. Doubts will come. There was a funny incident. Once Swami Turiyananda was sitting and having a talk with some of the Swamis and Brahmacharis. So suddenly Swami Turiyananda asked those who were in front of him, do you get sometimes doubts that God doesn't exist? So everybody, you know, sitting as though they were 100% convinced of the existence of God. Then nobody replied that no, we don't get any doubts. Then Swami Turiyananda said, you know, even after so many years, sometimes I get doubt whether God exists. Then many of them said, yes, Maharaj, we also get the doubts. Then he scolded them, you rascals. When I asked the question, none of you replied. You thought, hey, if you say that you got doubts about God, then people will look down upon you. These after so many years of living in Ramakrishna Vedanta Center, you still have doubts about the existence of God and the existence of Ramakrishna. These doubts can come only after realization. There would be no doubt. Until we realize something, going by faith is always a doubtful journey. But as we approach the goal, as Sri Ramakrishna says, when you are approaching the seashore, first of all, a cool breeze will start coming. And then you will hear that, you know, the waves lashing against the shores, a huge noise will be there. And then when you go and see actually the sea, and then you know without doubt such a thing as a sea exists. So doubts can come at any time. That's why we have to continue our spiritual practices in spite of the doubts. These are called Aranyaka. It's also called Rahasya. Upanishads are called Rahasya. Secret. They are secret not because nobody wants to tell you. They are secret because they are so hard to understand. Now, I mentioned, some of us did not read Upanishads. Some of us have read Gita, so we read Upanishads. Some of us have not read even Gita, but some of us have read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And what are the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna? God exists. To realize God is the goal of life, right? Take these two teachings. God exists, or do we know? Because Narendranath himself asked him, "Have you seen God?" He said, "Yes. Not only have I seen God, I can also show you God." And he touched him. And then he said, the goal of life is to realize God. Take this. God exists. The goal of life is to realize God. What do we understand? God exists. What do we understand by that statement? How many times we have not read this? How many times have we not read that the goal of life is God realization? When you are waiting at the Maidenhead railway station for the train to come, what is the goal of your life? Is it not the arrival? Suppose the train is late. Then what would you be looking? Looking at the God. What God? The watch God. 100 times you are looking at the watch. So, what is the Mahavakya that goes on in your mind? Are we convinced that God exists? If God exists, then He is right here. If He is right here, what have we to fear? What do we want? Are you happy? If you are not happy, then God doesn't exist for you. You know, we use the words in a very peculiar way. God means what? Satchidananda. Satchidananda means what? Infinite happiness. If God is nearby you, can you not be happy? Can you stop being happy if God is very near to you? Like how you know? If you are nearer to fire, don't you feel the warmth? Then if God is so near to you, then should you not feel happy? If you are not happy, you are reading God exists and you are feeling unhappy. What does that mean? That means you do not really understood the teaching of Sri Ramakrishna. And if we do not feel the urge to realize God, that means we have not understood Sri Ramakrishna's teachings. That is why they are called secret teachings. So it doesn't mean our study of the gospel is in vain. It only means we need to understand it further and further and further. There was one young man. He was sent to the teacher and he came back after acquiring knowledge. Then his father asked him, "Have you understood what your teacher taught you?" And he said, "Yes, I understood." And then the father put some questions and then the father also understood and the son also understood that he has not understood anything. Then the son became very repentant and, "Sir, you please teach me. I thought I understood, but now I know I did not understand." That is the prerequisite of humility. Humility is the prerequisite. What is it? I know, I understand. Your cup is full. But if you think you have not understood, you will be eager to understand it. That is the prerequisite. Father became the teacher. Son became the student. Then he says, my child, bring a cup of water. And the son brings, bring a little bit of salt. And the son brings, put the salt in the, now touch the salt. You can touch the salt. Now put it in the water and stir it well. And he did that. Now he says, now show me the salt. How can he show the salt? Then he asks, where is the salt now? Where is the salt? Then the son says, that question cannot be, where cannot be answered, because he is every, it is everywhere. Where is not salt in the water? Whichever part of the cup you touch and put it on the tongue, it is salty. The salt has become one with the water. Therefore, you cannot specifically point out. Then the son understood the implication. What is that? Brahman, everything is Brahman. Where is Brahman? The question is irrational, because it is like asking the salt, where is the salt? It has become one with the water. So where is Brahman? Brahman is everywhere. When we come to that realization, that is the real understanding. Until that time, it is only intellectual knowledge or information. This is what Sri Ramakrishna calls panditya, scholarship, useless scholarship. No, it is not completely useless, but from the ultimate point of view, it is useless. From our point of view, it is absolutely essential. Coming back to the to our subject now, so these Upanishads are 108, essential Upanishads are 10, and all the Upanishads have to deal with certain teaching. What is the teaching? What do they teach? They teach only about reality. In our practical day-to-day life, we have three realities. What are those three realities? Jiva, Jagat, Ishvara. I am, the world is there. Other than me, everything else is called Jagat, world. And Ishvara, provided that I am a believer in God, there is a God. So God is there, world is there, I am there. So now, the Upanishad has to answer these three questions. What is my real nature? What is the nature of the world? What is the nature of God? First. Secondly, the Upanishads have to teach, what is the relationship between me and the world and God? Is there any relationship? Or is there no relationship? Are these completely separate things? I go my way, the world goes its way, and God goes his own way. Is there any relationship? Now, these answers cannot be given by any science. Why? It is like one blind man explaining to the other blind man what is the excellence of a great painting. Is it possible? Only both must be sighted. If a sighted man tries to explain what is the greatness of a painting to a blind man, will it work? One blind man trying to explain to another blind man, will it work? And only one sighted man trying to explain to the other sighted man will work. All our five sense organs are incapable, because we are like blind people. We are part of this limitation. So we cannot understand what is beyond limitation with our limited instruments, sense organs. So the only way is scriptures, shastras. So these three, what is my real nature? What is the nature of this world? And what is the nature of God? And what is the relationship between us three? This is the subject matter of every religion. And that is the subject matter of Vedanta or Upanishads. What do they say about it? I already mentioned, according to Advaita Vedanta, all of us belong to one reality. And that reality is called Brahman. The word Brahman is derived from the word Brihat. That which is the biggest, not a comparative degree. It is the biggest. Beyond that, there is nothing. This biggest, we cannot comprehend, because it is so subtle. Everything is included in it. I am included. This world is included. What we call God is included. Everything comprises in that one word, Brahma. That means we are all Brahma. So we can't use the word we are all Brahma. There is only one reality, and that is called Brahman. This is the teaching according to Advaita. But if you go to other schools of philosophy, they say there is some difference. But we will not go into those peculiar details. I will take from the standpoint of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, which is Advaita Vedanta. I will take one example, which is Isavasya Upanishad, partly because it is one of the smallest of the Upanishads. it contains of 18 mantras, 18 verses. The smallest, of course, is even small, only 12 mantras. It's called Mandukya Upanishad. It consists of only 12 mantras. But what tough mantras they are. I don't even dare to, you know, open my mouth about it. It is so difficult. But I will take this particular Isavasya Upanishad. The Upanishad has derived its name from the very first verse. What is that? Isha Vasya Midagum Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyektena Bhunjita Magrida Kasyasvidhanam. So it starts with Isha Vasya. Therefore, it derived its name, title, from the first few words of this Upanishad, the beginning of this Upanishad. Isha Vasya Upanishad. So, how does it go? Here is, I am giving you a small taste. All this, whatever exists in this changing universe, should be covered by the Lord. Protect the self by this knowledge. Do not covet any other wealth. If a man wishes to live 100 years on this earth, he should live performing action, slowly purifying his mind and leading him to this knowledge. For you who cherish a worldly desire and regard yourself not as Brahman but as a man, there is no other way by which you can keep work from clinging to you, excepting offering it to the Lord. Verily, those worlds of the asuras or demons are enveloped in blind darkness, and there too they all repair after death, who are slayers of the Atman. I will come to the meaning later on. So what is the nature of that Atman? That non-dual Atman, though never stirring, is swifter than the mind. The senses cannot reach it, for it moves ever in front. Though standing still, it overtakes others who are running. Because of Atman, Vayu, the world soul, apportions the activities of all. That Atman moves and moves not. It is far and likewise near. It is inside all this and it is outside all this. The wise man beholds all beings in the self and the self in all beings. For that reason, he doesn't hate anyone. To this seer, all things have verily become the self. What delusion, what sorrow can there be for him who beholds that oneness? It is he who pervades all. He who is bright and bodiless, without scar or sinews, pure and by evil unpierced. Who is the seer, omniscient, transcendent, uncreated? He has duly allotted to the eternal world creators their respective duties. Don't bother about the words. What it simply means is, whatever we are experiencing, I am seeing you are seeing me. I am hearing you are hearing me. Who is he? This is all pervaded by the Divine Lord. Meaning what? Who is talking? The Lord is talking. Who is listening? The Lord is listening. Who is not listening? The Lord is not listening. Who is not understanding? The Lord is not understanding. Good and bad, whatever, it is all nothing but the Lord. With this verse, mantra it is called, the essence of the Holy Upanishad is revealed to us. Because if we can only understand that this universe that we see in front of us is nothing but the Divine Lord, means Self, Atman, Brahman, then we are free. We are free not because somebody frees us, because it is the Lord, that is the truth. But unfortunately, we have forgotten the truth. The scripture only reminds us what is the truth. It's very essential for us. Only reminder. Scripture is only a reminder. There was a man who forgets everything. So his wife was very worried. She had to post a letter. So she gave him the letter, told him 100 times, don't forget to post it. And he promised he will not forget it. And he was going towards the post office. And every few seconds somebody knocks him and says, don't forget to post the letter. Don't forget the post letter. So he was surprised. Who did you know that I need to post the letter? He said, you know, your wife has written on your back. Please remind him to post the letter. You read any page of Gospel, any open page of the Upanishad, any scripture, all that it tells us, don't go on and trying to kill this fellow because he is not a Christian, he is not a Hindu, he is not a Muslim. Don't go on wasting your time. It reminds us only one thing. God is everywhere. It is He who created. It is He which has been created. He Himself has become this world. But or we do not know this fact. We need to know this fact. This is what the scripture is there to remind us. So the first verse of this Upanishad says that everything is pervaded by the Lord. That means everything is nothing but the manifestation of the Divine Lord. Live in this world with this knowledge. Do not covet any other wealth, because every other wealth is ephemeral, perishing. It is trouble giving. This is the only knowledge that is necessary for you to be eternally happy. But supposing many people are not capable of living up to this life, they have worldly desires, what should you do? And he says, you know, whatever works you do, you spend your time not in idleness, but in doing such actions which will slowly bring you to this knowledge. So the scripture is telling us, don't stop working. No, go on working, because your very desires, means your very restlessness of the mind, desires make the mind restless. So your very restlessness of the mind will make you do work. So you work, but only do such works, only do in such a way that these works slowly remind you of your true nature and will take you to God. This is called Karma Yoga. So supposing a person neglects this teaching, then such a person is called the slayer of the Atma, killer of the Atma, murderer of the Atma. Now nobody can murder the Atma for the simple reason, you know, you can't even see it. Not only that, he is the murderer. Yeah, he is the murderer. You know, a man was sitting there by the roadside and drinking some roadside tea and smoking a cigar. So a Christian missionary was passing by. So he looked at this man, felt pity for him. And he came and said, "No, how many cigars do you smoke every day?" He said, "Only about 50-60. So to what each cigar, how much does it cost? He calculated something. So every day 50 cigars, 50 into 1 pound or whatever, 50 pounds. Every day, since how long have you been smoking? For about 50 years. So the missionary calculated how much money this man had spent. And then he said, "That you see, if you did not smoke, you see, look at that building. There is a multi-storied building. He said, that building would have been yours today if only you had not smoked." The man said, "Is it so?" You see, missionary said, "Yes, I'm telling you, it is the truth." Then the man said, "Sit down, missionary. So, do you smoke?" He said, "No." "And do you own that building?" He said, "No." "Do you know to whom that building belongs?" The missionary said, "No, it belongs to me." So, a slayer of the Atman doesn't mean that it is an object to be harmed, hurt. What it means is, being ignorant of the Atman is slaying the equivalent to, slaying means what, if supposing you have a billion pounds in a packet and you burn them. You have burnt all the money? You have lost them? Suppose you have a billion pounds in a packet. It is there, but you don't see it. You don't know it. You know that you had it, but now you don't know. If you don't know about it, what good will it do to you? You can't even buy a cup of tea because you don't know about it. So ignorance is what is called slaying. A person who doesn't know his own true nature is the most miserable fellow in the world. So what is this Atman here? To put it in common words, it means the Atman is the nature of infinite bliss. So you want bliss, but unfortunately you lost that packet of bliss. I mean, it is there, but you don't know where it is. What good will it do to you? So that is what is called slaying of the Atman. The scripture is there to remind us that You are that Atma. You don't need to seek for it. You are searching for it everywhere. Like the myopic fellow. He is so myopic that he can't see anything without specs. One day he was seen furiously searching. Somebody came and asked him, "What are you searching?" He said, "I am searching for my specs." You see, he is not capable of searching anything without his specs on. And he says, I seem to have lost my specs. I am searching for them. How could he do the very search if without the specs on? So the other person says, "You are foolish. They are there right on your eyes. Otherwise, your search is not possible." So the idea is that which we are searching for is none other than our own selves, the knower. The searcher is not somebody else. The searched object is not something else. We are searching for our own self. In Vedantic terminology, we use this. A musk deer searching for the musk. The musk is supposed to have come from its own navel. So it is enchanted with that perfume. So it is searching. I must find out. Where will it find? It is running around mad, not knowing that it is originating from its own navel. So this is what Vedanta wants to tell us. Thou art that. So the nature of the self is, it is inside, it is outside. It moves not. Not paradoxical. That which is everywhere, neither moves nor doesn't move. The language is, there are various ways of using language to convey information to us. So this is one of the ways, paradoxical method of it moves, it doesn't move. It is inside you, it is outside you, etc. This is the essence of the Isavasya Upanishad, which says that the whole universe is nothing but the Divine Lord. You are also nothing but the Divine Lord. Who are you? You are the Divine. What is the world? That is also the Divine. What is the Divine Lord? He is also the Divine. So there are no three. There is only one. Because of ignorance, appears to be three separate objects, beings. No, it is not true. This is from the Advaitic point of view. So this is the subject matter of the Upanishads, to let us know the reality of the individual soul, of the universe, of God, and the interrelationship between these two. What is the essence? Whatever exists is only Brahman. So there is nothing called individual, world, or God. Everything is one, and nothing else besides that one exists, and the name of that one is called Brahman. Realize means you have that, get that knowledge of the Brahman. This is what every Upanishad teaches us. This is what the Vedanta, or the end of the Vedas, or the third part of the Vedas called Jnanakanda teaches us. This very truth, very difficult for us to understand because of the language, distance. So this truth, the same truth has been conveyed in an accessible form, and all the other scriptures which convey this knowledge in an accessible form are known as Smriti, secondary scriptures. Briefly, I will deal with them in my next class.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.